And the what?
His eyes.
No, what? Where are his eyes looking? They're looking. They're looking out and up, and he's attentive to the Father. I think that's exactly right. And what expression? I guess attentive would be his expression. Can you think of other words? Thoughtful, calm, content, contemplative. You see some joy. So he wants us to emulate him. He wants us to listen to the Father. He wants us to look to the Father. He wants us to be open and contemplative, and so and receptive to what the Father has. Right. All right. So that was Swedish Jesus. Now here's a contrast. Let's go to this is Orthodox Jesus. Now, this takes some translating, because. But let's go with first impressions. What's stern? Almost angry, judgmental. His eyebrows are, he's got like the they're you actually do that good. Do that again. Yeah, there it is. So make that face again and hold it. What expression is it? Is you? If okay. Now this is why it needs translating. Here's an odd thing. Yeah. What's his hand? Interesting. I've never heard this before. So what is his hand doing?
Well, it's like he's intent on saying something.
Oh, now I see it more like. So you're it's more negative, but with you it's like he's intent on saying something. Listen. Okay, now let me explain. It's worth doing. Yes. No, go for it.
I think it's the two natures of Jesus, divine and human with these fingers, and then the Trinity with the other three. That's a guess.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yay. That's true. But also, like, listen. but that's right. So two natures in one person, or two natures in one person, and then three Trinity, right? So this is, they got the secret, like, this is before. Yeah. So now let me explain what they're intending. Because I think some of the icon writers, and they're called writers, not painters, which I'll explain. Some of the icon writers may have misunderstood what they're supposed to be doing. And they may intentionally even draw a frown on them, which of course is going to feel like disappointment. Here's what they're meant to be communicating. So first of all, they said if we're going to do pictures of Jesus or pictures of Bible stories, this will be a Bible translation. So you don't, in a Bible translation, you don't get to just write anything you want. You follow the script, right? So they said, for illiterate people or for worshipers, if we're going to paint pictures of Jesus, then we need to standardize it somehow so that it's an actual translation of the Bible instead of just a piece of art. So when they would write these, at the Third Ecumenical Council, they said, We need to combine anything we remember of what Jesus actually looked like, along with symbolism that tells us the truth beyond just the flesh. So what they actually remembered at the Third Ecumenical Council, which was all these bishops together, they had a tradition that Jesus was a man of average height, which was about 5'6" then, with hazel brown hair and eyes, his hair tied back, as was the manner of the Nazarites, and a sparse beard coming towards a point, but not to a point. This is how they described him. And so they're working that here, but they also want to have symbols. Long nose representing discernment, big forehead representing wisdom, small mouth, Isaiah 42, he will not cry out in the streets. So he's a listener. Sometimes he has bigger ears because he's a listener. Now, the look they're going for, and they missed it when it comes to your perception, the look they're going for is this. I know. and I'm completely unrattled. He so this is the face, this is not the face of him being disappointed in you. This is the face of him watching CNN all day. Because he sees it all. And he's completely unrattled. So there's a concern to it. But he's not nervous. He's like, I'm the Son of God, and I don't get nervous. But I know what's happening in Syria. I know exactly what ISIS is doing and what they're planning. I know what's coming down for, like, America. I know what's happening with trafficking in the sex slavery movement. He knows all of that stuff. And he's at peace. Can you see it then? So, but you need a translator, don't you? Just like with a Bible translation. So I have one of these in my house, and in the Orthodox Church, we, as a sign of affection, we like to kiss. I kiss the icon. I walk in my house, I kiss Jesus. And I know it's a painting, but it's like, it's one of the ways I worship. And it's like, I love you, Jesus, and I'm so glad that you are not on my emotional roller coaster. That's what this is saying. I am not on an emotional roller coaster. I am love. Now, I wish they could paint it in a way that the love shines through more, but you get the idea. Now, some of us, we're just like, that's not going to work for us. So let's, yep. Mark first, yep. Yes, it does matter. Well, so first of all, the top letter is IC. This would be like Greek script for Jesus Christ, a short form. The different open Bible will say different things. I don't even know what this one says, but the one I have at home is in English, and it's like, love one another. Love one another. So it'll often be like, the commandments, there's not very many commandments of Jesus, but they're about love. Love one another. Love your neighbor. Love your enemies. And he does the love God thing. So, yeah. And then you had a comment? Good. Very good. Okay, but now some of us, we're seeing more than just the human Jesus here. We're seeing the divine character behind him as well. That's why in Eastern icons of the crucifixion, they're not as gruesome, because they're wanting to say, this was more than a murder. It was a murder, but it was more than a murder. This is the victorious Christ enthroned on his cross. But let's go to the next picture. Some of us need this Jesus. Bruce Marciano Jesus. You've got all these different movie Jesuses now, right? You've got the Ted Neely Jesus, and you've got the sexy Jesus from the last movie that came out. And you've got the very aloof Jesus movies where he's like the mystic who's kind of disconnected from it all. But Marciano did a great job because he's like warm. He laughs, even when he's rebuking the disciples for their lack of faith. Oh, you guys, when are you going to get it? It's okay. Boat's not going down. You little faith. You know, it's corrective, but not condemning. Even when he was trying to do the scene where he's going after the scribes and Pharisees and calling them a brood of vipers, and it's just not working. Because it was out of the character of Jesus that he knew. And so Bruce had to go for a walk, and he goes and he prays, like, how do I do this scene? And God shows him a child running out into a road. And he begins to weep. And he comes back and he does the scene. Oh, you know, scribes and Pharisees. And he's like weeping through the thing. And you're like, oh, that's it. That's it. Or even with the Canaanite woman or the Syrophoenician woman, he's walking along. And if you just read the text, it can really sound like he's quite a racist sexist. About she wants her daughter healed, and Jesus is like, the bread is reserved for the children, not for the dogs. But in the movie, he's kind of tongue-in-cheek, and he nudges his disciples, and he nods. And what he's doing is he's resisting her, and as he resists her, her faith gets more insistent. He's like, bam, your daughter's, is it a daughter? Healed. She's healed right now. And so sometimes these Jesus movies actually will bring to light things. I used to collect Jesus movies, and then I would take clips from them. And let's say for our baptism class, I would show them 12 different scenes of Jesus' baptism from different movies, and then we would talk about it and so on. But that can be helpful for people. And even then, what would happen if when you're praying, you say, Jesus, I just want to behold you in prayer for now. What if you saw his face? Well, then we realize that the image of Christ in our mind wouldn't necessarily be literally what he looked like on earth. You know, the little girl who had her weird heaven experience or whatever, and she comes back, or I don't even know if she had a heaven experience, but she starts painting Jesus, and he's got blue eyes. Well, did first century Jesus have blue eyes? No, he didn't. Probably not. But what she's seeing is an image that represents, it's full of imagery and symbolism and warmth and love to her, and that's the point. So if you're looking at Jesus in your heart and you see a movie actor, maybe that's okay. Because what you're meant to see is the smile, the kindness, the love, the concern, and the hair and the nose and the beard are like the image, but what you're seeing is deeper than an image. You're seeing a truth about him. I'll give you an example. I met this woman who'd been miraculously saved from drug addiction. She'd been living in a dumpster in East Vancouver, full-on drug addict, and she knew she was going to die. And she cried out to God. She said, would you just save me? And he miraculously saved her from her addiction. Like, overnight, she was healed from heroin addiction. But now she'd been, like, a Christian for 9 years, and she said, I've never once heard God. And I'm like, that seems not true to me. The Bible doesn't say my sheep might hear my voice. The Bible says my sheep hear my voice. It's simply a fact. You're probably hearing them, but you just don't count it. She's like, I don't know. And when you talk about seeing him, I never see him. And I'm like, well, let's try. Just close your eyes. And I said, Jesus, would you show her your face? And she goes, well, I see Ted Neely. Ted Neely was the actor that played Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar. And she said, you know, I just see Ted Neely. I'm like, what if that counts? Because what is Ted Neely Jesus doing in your... Well, he's smiling at me. What are his eyes saying? It's like his eyes are saying, you don't need to be ashamed. And she starts crying. And now what is he saying? And for the next, again, like the other guy with the pride wall, about 45 minutes, Jesus just speaks to her. And she can see the love and the kindness. I'm like, was that Ted Neely? No, that wasn't Ted Neely. That was Jesus. Jesus was just borrowing that image. So when she was all done, and I'm weighing and testing everything she's hearing, and it was like bang on, 100% confirmed by Scripture and everything we know about Jesus. And then at the end, I said, why do you think he used the image of Ted Neely? It was on purpose. And she goes, it was very funny. She said, because I didn't know how to love him, which is a song from the movie when she first was saved. But her way of loving him was she went and got a big tattoo across her stomach of the logo for Jesus Christ Superstar. So like it was Jesus Christ Superstar was on her stomach. And now Jesus is going, you know, even that, I'll take that as worship. I know you were fumbling around. I know you didn't know how to love me. I know. And I was there the whole time. And I'm like, this is the most amazing thing. So even if we borrow images from an icon or from a Swedish Jesus painting or from a movie, God may borrow the images, but that what he's communicating with is the love and the kindness and so on. All right, any questions before we move on? Okay, so this can even still be a little bit like, I don't know, that kind of feels out there. All right, let's get more conservative. It's okay to do that. I'm a skeptic. I'm a convinced skeptic, but by nature, I'm a skeptic. I need handles. I need something solid. How about the Gospels? Would the Gospels be solid enough for you? So let's move on to encountering Jesus in the Gospels. Did you know that the Gospels were not written just as biographies? They are a venue for you to encounter the living Christ. When these are supernatural books that as you immerse yourself in the Gospels, that you will meet Jesus. That's how we used to do evangelism. How do you share the gospel? You give someone the gospel. Here's a gospel of John. Read it. Pray this. Jesus, if you're real, I want to meet you in this book. We used to do that in the 70s all the time. Then we thought we'd get clever and make outlines and four spiritual laws and Romans roads. And it's like, how about just give them the story? He came and he was born and he lived and he healed and he loved and he died and he rose. And people, we forget that this is a supernatural nuclear story. I mean, it's the most powerful event in the universe. And if you just tell the story, what if you trusted the story? So what there was a group called the Society of Jesus. Their other name is the Jesuits. The Society of Jesus thought this. What if we started a group where they read all four Gospels every week? Every week. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Every week. And what if you didn't just read them? What if you stepped into the story with all five senses as if you were there? So they did. And they became one of the most powerful missionary movements in history. Now, we didn't like them because they were Catholics. But you know what would happen? Actual story. They would show up on the beaches of some like South Sea island, and they looked so funny in their big old robes, and the children would come out from the jungle and look at them on the beach and eventually be drawn down to them. And then one story I heard is that they start teaching the kids how to do this. Go into the gospel stories with all five senses. And the kids are experiencing what we call the Ignatian exercises. Ignatius of Loyola was the founder, right? So they're doing these exercises where you're walking through the story, and then the kids go back into the jungle. Well, weeks later, finally, the elders from the village show up. And they're like, who's Jesus? And the Jesuits are like, why do you ask? And the elders say, because the children are healing people in his name. Supernatural. So when a kid goes into the story and grabs the hem of Jesus' garment, this is real. And so let's just do some examples of beautiful stories from the Gospels. Let's look at the first picture. Hard to see, but does anyone recognize this? What story is this? It's what? It's the prodigal son. Someone know the artist even? Rembrandt. Yeah, Rembrandt's prodigal son. You can't see it super well, but the light is on the highlight of the picture, right? This is how Rembrandt paints. And the son has come home. And this is the gospel in a nutshell. When I read the prodigal son story, for me it's very visual. I know where the house is, I know where the door is, and then I see the pathway down to where the pig pen was, and I know the road, like the son takes the road back, and then I also know the field where the older brother, like in my head it's all a scene, right? And I can step into the scene. And I can be the prodigal, and I've got my speech ready. So I can get my job as a servant. And he's like, I don't want you to be a servant. I want you to be my son. And then I can, like, just fall into the Father's arms. So that's a kind of beholding. It's a kind of beholding that's really solid, because if you don't want to go off track, the whole story's there for you. And then you can hear what the Father has to say to you. Let's look at another one. Okay, does anyone recognize this story? Oh, yeah, woman caught in adultery. Where's the man? You tell me, I'll tell you where. It was a big setup is what it was. They set up the woman to set up Jesus, to trap him. And then if we had read the scriptures really carefully and had more time to just dive into it, we might not ask so much, what was he writing in the dust? We would notice that Jeremiah says that Yahweh says, for those of you who reject the fountain of living waters, I will write you in the dirt. So I thought, fountain of living waters, this isn't that in John 7? Sure enough, right before this story, Jesus says, I'm the fountain of living waters. I'm the spring of living waters. The Pharisees reject him. Very next scene, he's writing them in the dirt. And they start leaving, because the older ones first, because they maybe remember Jeremiah in ways we forgot to check, right? Well, there's so much of this stuff in Scripture, it's not surprising if we overlook it. And anyways, that's not the important part. The important part is how he treats the woman. And when I was growing up, here was the tone. It was off. Where are your accusers? They're gone, my Lord. Neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. Or I will condemn you. He doesn't say that. It's more like, neither do I condemn you. In fact, we can act like today's adultery never even happened. Forgiven. Clean slate. What do you want to do with it? You're free. You want a new life? Go have a new life. Right? And you don't have to go back. You don't have to go back. Please don't go back. Why would you go back? You know? And I'm telling you, she didn't go back. So it's a really precious story about how Jesus, what if we were to be more like him? Why is it that we, not you particularly, but we in general, the church in North America, who do we look most like? At least from that, that's our reputation. And even our reputation could be just a lie too, right? When I go to little churches like this, I don't see a bunch of Pharisees. I just, church after church, I meet precious people. I'm like, oh, so maybe even the church is the woman caught in adultery, and it's being condemned. Well, let's just make sure that we're not the Pharisees. And let's be like Jesus, okay? Let's do another one. Okay, this is, do you recognize that? Oh, the bottom. So it's the four friends are lowering the guy down, and Jesus is waiting. And so we'll use this one even sometimes in corporate prayer when we're praying for healing for someone. We'll say, imagine you're one of the four people, and you've just dug a hole in the ceiling, you've removed the tiles, and the person we want to pray for together, let's lower them down to Jesus now. And we look at Jesus waiting for them. And then we fast forward and we're in the crowd around Jesus. And we see him lay his hands maybe on the paralytic or on our friend. And I'll say, now go, and we'll do this with little kids too. We'll say, okay, kids, now in your hearts, just you lay hands on them too. And we'll all pray with Jesus for this person. And we've seen some awesome healings that way. And also that the Lord took the person home. But we delivered them into his care. That's the bottom line. We don't always heal people. In fact, 5% maybe. But we always deliver them into his care. And when they're in Jesus' care, some wonderful things happen. All right, next slide. Okay, you recognize this one? It's the lady with the issue of blood. Now, you have to understand, in this story, her condition, where she's bleeding all the time, made her unclean, and she had the condition for how many years? Was it 12? I don't know, long time. All that time, she could never go to worship. Couldn't go in the synagogue, couldn't go in the temple, couldn't touch anybody. She wasn't just an outcast from her worshiping community. She may have been an outcast from her community. Not sure how extreme it was. It's hard to, sometimes in New Testament scholarship, we just make stuff up. That's the dirty little secret. We don't know. But we do know that under the law, she was excluded because of this. And she had the guts to go through a crowd, touching people, and then grab the hem of his garment, and this power goes out of him. And then he just affirms her faith and restores not only her health, think about, restores her to the community, restores her to the synagogue and to temple worship. And so here's the one who couldn't go in the temple. She touches the temple. He's the temple. And there's nothing that he can't wash, you know? So wonderful. Well, these are meant to be venues for beholding the Lord. So we behold him not just in our hearts, but we behold him in the book, in the gospel. And this is a big part of how I do discernment now. When I want to be clear in my discernment, I make sure that the Jesus in my heart isn't just a projection of me. It's not just me on Prozac or something, so I'm, you know, the nice version of me. No, that the Jesus in my heart should align perfectly with the Jesus in the Gospels. And when he doesn't, you just double check. Look, what's going on here? And sometimes the Jesus in our heart has to help us interpret the Gospels. And sometimes the Gospels have to be quality control for the Jesus in our hearts. And so sometimes, I'll give you one example. Sometimes the Jesus in our hearts can get overly triumphalistic, like strutting. It's like, did the Jesus in the Gospels strut? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are the meek. Jesus said, I come to me, you who are weary and heavy laden, because I'm meek. Meek is not weak, but it is power under control for the purpose of goodness. And it's real humility. Did you know Jesus is the most humble person in the universe? Well, he was God, and he actually like ends up taking the form of a servant, dying on a cross. I would call that the biggest condescension in history, right? That's humility. And when Jesus does that, it's not temporary. He's showing us what God has always been like. God has always been the most humble person in the universe. So anyway, that's what I do with gospel stories, because sometimes I don't feel this here, but like it used to be I'd go to churches and they would only know the Bible and they had no experience of Jesus. And then I know other churches now, like 10 years later, they really have an experience of Jesus. They completely forget what the Bible is, don't even have one in their house anymore. I'm like, you need some quality control here, or you're going to be doing all sorts of horrible things in the name of Jesus. So we bring together our hearts and the Gospels in a dance, right? So what's the next thing on the slides? Okay, now we move from, if you can hear him and you can see him, then we talk about that's a meeting. And a big part of my job is to set up meetings with Jesus. I just love this. Because you can say, you want to meet the Lord? No problem. We'll make an appointment with him. I'll hook you up. You know, 1 o'clock Thursday, we'll get together and you'll meet the Lord. You know, we can have meetings and we can set up meetings. This is our ministry. This is what Sozo does. You set up a meeting with Jesus, right? So, but again, if before we get into like the scary stuff, let's just be biblical with it. The Bible provides us with some meeting places that if you only use these for the rest of your life, you'd be fine. So let's use these examples. So first one, Mark. Okay. What do you see here? Jesus, he's being the good shepherd. Does it remind you of any psalm, for example? Psalm 23. Now, remember I said earlier, even though we've been singing this stuff for years, it only becomes a problem when you teach it from the Bible, which is weird. But didn't we sing, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus, look full in his wonderful face"? And the things of earth will grow faint, strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. We were already singing about looking at him, about beholding him. In fact, we were commanding it. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Okay, I will. Oh, there he is. You know, so it's not like this is new stuff. We've been doing it forever. But when I say forever, I don't even just mean when that hymn was written. I mean like Psalm 23 was written 3,000 years ago. Can you imagine going back in a time machine to David and saying, you know this song you wrote? Everyone's going to know it. If I do a funeral, there'll be unchurched people, and I'll start reading Psalm 23, and their lips start moving. They know it. I'm like, wow, this 3,000-year-old song, why is it so powerful? Well, because it's an actual meeting place. You meet God in that psalm. So I think what I should do, I'm just going to read it to you. And you can either watch it in your heart or you can look at the Good Shepherd on the screen. How about that? But think of all the images, all the different meetings that happen in these few verses. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. What's a green pasture look like in your heart? And you lay down there. The Good Shepherd's there. Is he laying with you? Is he sitting? Is he standing? And we meet him there. Makes me lie down in green pastures. Leads me by still waters, or literally waters of peace. So we're walking now by a water. Some kind, is it a creek? Is it a river? Restores my soul. He really does. So Jesus, Good Shepherd, restore my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. You probably have an image of that, right? Is it a chasm? Is it a desert? Is it a, for me it's a chasm. It could be your most painful memory. Could be when you lost a loved one. Could be a trauma. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why not? Because thou art with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. So if you're going through the valley of the shadow of death, don't stop. You go through it with him. And you come out the other side. He prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies. What's the next line? What's a prepared table look like? It's full of richest foods and the finest of drinks. And in the Gospels, Jesus says, when you come to that table, I myself am going to serve you. He says that. And then, let's see, he anoints my head with oil. It's like some kind of product, anointing oil. And my cup overflows. Surely, goodness and mercy. The three angels. Surely, goodness and mercy. No. Truly, truly, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. What's the house of the Lord look like in your heart? And you get to dwell there for the rest of your life and into the next. That's not just an old song. That's a meeting place. And you can see it. You've met him there before. Again, nothing new. From the time we probably first heard that psalm, we could see it in our hearts. This is when David says, "Thy word have I hid in my heart." It's like, I've actually, it's a place in me. And I can go to that place anytime I want to for the rest of my life, and the good shepherd will always, always be there. And I can access that peace of that place at will. So when you're rattled, there's a biblically based meeting place established in your heart where you can go be with him and hear his voice and just let him hold you. People pay a lot of money for that. Like to get peace in a pharmacy or in a street corner. And it's like, do you realize that you have the hottest commodity in the world? A never-ending spring of divine peace. And you can give it away. Freely you've been received, freely give. And so if you want to set up a meeting with somebody who's, let's say they're dumping on you. And you're like, wow, you really sound like you could use peace. Do you want it? Some people don't actually want it. They're addicted to the dumping. But if, yeah, I really want it. Okay, well, close your eyes, and I want you to picture frame by frame Psalm 20. And you just lead them through it. And it's like drinking fresh, clear spring water to them. Because Jesus is the fountain of living water. All right, but there's other meeting places. Let's go to the next slide. This is the cross. So I go to the cross a lot because the cross is the place of exchange. The cross, I often don't, like this is the gruesome Western kind of version of the cross, but I put it up here because my friend Peter, this is how he came to experience Christ. He had been an actor in the musical Hair, which was like full-on nudity on stage stuff. I mean, he was a hardcore hippie in the early 70s. Drug addict, all of that stuff. And these two little old ladies with hallelujah buns would wait outside the playhouse and witness to people. And so he comes out one day, and these two little missionary ladies, they say, would you and your friend like to come to our house for lunch? And they're like, sure. So they go to their house for lunch, and the ladies, they walked in the house, and they felt all this love and peace. It's like at your place. And then when they're done, the ladies say, would you mind if we prayed for you? And then Peter's like, sure, man. You know, he was open. He was kind of stoned. He wanted to try other forms of spirituality, like transcendental meditation. But you can't do that until you've been 3 days sober or clean. And he could never get 3 days. So the ladies pray for him. And him and his friend like were like, whoa, man. This is better than drugs. And they found themselves not needing drugs after that because they had felt the love of God. But it was an experience of love, right? So Peter's like, he ends up going on a quest that leads him to the actual painting in Europe of this painting by Grunewald. And he stands there, and as he stands there, all his sins start flashing before his eyes. But without condemnation. So this is the weird thing. He's forced to look at the meaning of his life and all of his actions, all of the harm he had caused his parents, all of the strange things he had done, all of that. He sees it all, and then he hears a voice as he's looking at the painting. And the voice says, I forgive you. And he just began to weep, and all of his sins were washed away as he wept them out over the next, you know, hour and a half or something like crazy like that. And so this is the place where we come and we can exchange our guilt for his forgiveness. All the stuff in Isaiah, we can bring our burden of grief and we receive his joy. We can bring our ashes, and he gives us beauty. What do we bring our grief, and he gives us like garments of praise instead of a spirit of heaviness. It's exchange. The cross is the place of exchange. And so when I'm feeling any kind of burden, whether it's sadness or anger or grief or guilt, you name it, the cross is a great place to do that. But it's also a great place to bring people, bring other people in prayer. We brought them to the throne of grace last night, but sometimes I'll bring them to the cross. And so I remember a lady, she was in her 50s, and she was really struggling because she hated all men. She hated her husband, she hated her pastor, didn't trust anyone, and she wanted help. And I'm like, where does this come from? Well, it turned out when she was a little girl, her brother was really mean to her. And he would even, like, he abused her in all sorts of ways, including, like, he'd lock her under the trailer with the rats. I mean, it was, like, horrible, horrible. And he would do this just because she would try to be friends with him. She just wanted a friend, and she wanted her brother to be her best friend because they would always be brother and sister. And other friends come and go, right? And so she would initiate friendship, and he would do this to her every time. So now she just had sort of made that about all males. So I brought her to the cross, and I said, could you just bring your brother to the cross in your heart? Now she's in her 50s. And she watches Jesus. He's not on the cross. He's like in front of the cross, and he's alive, and he's well. And he takes her brother behind the cross, and now it's like, from now on, the cross will be your filter, and only love and blessing will pass through the cross. But all that other stuff, it can't come through the cross. And he just makes, like, it a filter, right? I'm not exaggerating. In less than 5 minutes, he phoned her from another province and said, I don't know why I'm calling you, but it's just like I wanted to have a conversation as friends. And then they just talked for, like, the next hour. What she'd wanted all her life happened the moment she left her brother at the cross. It was so strange. And sometimes it's not like that, but sometimes it's like that. So I really value that as a meeting place. Let's do one more. The next slide, please. All right, so this one we covered earlier, right? Over and over in Scripture, Ephesians 1, Colossians 3, Hebrews 12, Revelation 4 and 5, it's Jesus on his throne. And this is also a great meeting place, so I'll go there in prayer, and sometimes I'll start out, I'll come before the throne, and maybe I'll come to the throne for worship. And when we're together in a group in church, that's where we are. Did you know that? And so it's almost like you come together in worship, and then we all retreat into our hearts, and then each of your hearts has a door open. And we all go through the door, and what do you know? We're at the throne together. How did you get here? And you'll get, like, all sorts of people that you didn't think should be there. It's like, how did the Baptists get in here? I don't know. And they're wondering, how did the Pentecostals get in here? I don't know. It's like, oh, no, is that a Catholic? It's even worse. It's Mary. Oh, no. So, but we all, that's where we come in worship. And so I'll worship, and then it's a great place to do intercession, right? So we brought people to the throne of grace last night. And then at the end of Revelation 3, it's like, you don't have to grovel here. In fact, please don't. Revelation 3 says, to those who overcome, I give you the right to sit with me on my throne. Now, we don't do that as haughty, prideful people. We do it as little kids. This is Papa. Go sit on his lap. You know, so in our kids' book, we have a little girl sitting on Jesus' lap on his big comfy throne. And then some of you are into, like, spiritual warfare stuff. If you're going to do that, do it from his lap. Did you know that he's placed all his enemies under his feet? They're his footstool. So now think about this. You're on his lap and the enemy's under his feet. Bounce on his lap. And the God of peace, not the God of war, not the God of almighty power and devastation, not Zeus, the God of peace will soon crush Satan underneath your feet, says Romans. Well, I recommend letting him crush Satan underneath Jesus' feet, because that's where the footstool is. But it's kind of like you are now seated in heavenly realms far above principalities, authorities, powers, and all that. So the whole spiritual warfare thing, it's not You don't have to get magical about it or even like worry about it as if, oh, that's a big demon. Compared to who? You, maybe. Compared to Jesus, this stuff gets lost between his toes. And when you know that, you'll fear no evil. And so, what a great meeting place, right? All right, let's check our time. Good. All right, now, what I want to do is I want to say, for those who want to go another layer of this, you can just, if you want, you can use these biblical meeting places. You can use any gospel story at all, or you can use Psalm 23 or the cross or the throne room. But let's say with Psalm 23, what is David actually doing there? David is thinking about a safe place where he can meet with God in prayer. And so you can copy him by going through Psalm 23, or you can emulate him. Emulate him means you get to pick your own safe place. Because most of you aren't actually shepherds. But for my new friend Menno, one of his familiar safe places, a great place to pray even probably, is your garden, right? So whereas David's in the green pastures, you might be out with the vines and the raspberries or in your shop, right? And you can meet him there. And then we just started thinking, well, anybody can meet him in David's safe place, or they could have their own. So I started just praying this with all kinds of people. We especially started doing this in the recovery houses for women who're just off the streets, never been in a church. Some of them had been, ladies of the evening. And all of them are coming off meth or heroin or coke or crack, and but they're on a 12-step program. And in the 12-step program in Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, step 11 says this: through prayer and meditation, we sought to improve our conscious contact with God. I'm like, I can help you. I can totally help you with step 11. They're like, they're still tweaking from they're in withdrawal, right? Really? You could help me? It's like, yeah, no problem. And so we'll get all the women and we'll just do this series of questions that get them to their own Psalm 23. So, and I want to train you in it, but the best way to train you is have you experience it. So I don't know if we'll get done this morning, but I think probably we could almost. So here's the questions. And I would rather just tell you them again later and have you write them down later so you can experience it now. So don't try to multitask. Just experience it. And so first question for all of you, and we ask this with the ladies. If you could meet God in your own safe place, anywhere at all, what would it look like? And I like to make it really casual so that I'll call it a thought experiment so they don't get freaked out and think we're praying. But we're praying. So, okay, we're going to do a thought experiment. And also, it's even nice just to do it with eyes open in a coffee shop or something. So it's not intense like a sozo meeting, but it can really help a sozo meeting. But just like in evangelism or whatever. So let's just quickly do this. Who would like to share where you would meet God in a safe place? If you could meet him anywhere at all. Say again? In your back field? Yep. When you're driving in the car. Anyone else? Yep.
Out in a lake.
Out in a lake in a kayak. Okay. Go ahead. Sitting on the beach watching the waves come in. Yep. In a secret garden with flowers. So you can see that they're tailor-made then, can't you? And meanwhile, I'm secretly praying, God, show them a really good one. So it's you're having a vision, but you're involved, right? Because you get to pick. You know, but he knows. And so he'll help you. with this. Okay, and then the second question, well, what I'll do is I'll ask more details to make it more vivid, like you have in Revelation 4 or in Psalm 23. More details. So who said the back field? In the back field, what's in the field? Is it grass or hay or? Okay, it's wheat, but it hasn't headed out yet. And okay, good. So just hold that and get real vivid with it. And now what was yours? The secret garden. Yeah. Oh, so there's two chairs there now. Okay, so now we're getting more vivid, right? What kind of flowers? Okay, so now just see the azaleas, see the chairs, see the garden. Yeah, and what was yours? In the car. What kind of car is it? Okay. Chevy Cobalt, and you're driving? Okay. What color is the car? Is it clean, or have you kind of messy? Okay, good. Okay, yeah. So vivid, right? Right. Okay. All right. Let's use those three for now. So then, so where are you in the picture? You're sitting on the grass. By the wheat. So you're not in the wheat, but you're sitting. And are you on grass, or is there also a blanket, or just on grass? You're sitting cross-legged on a blanket on the grass by the wheat, which sounds like Daniel. I had a vision in my head, in a dream, in my head, on my bed. That's a Dr. Seuss book waiting to happen. In a vision, in a dream, in my head, on my bed. Daniel 7. Okay? And then with yours, we know you're in the driver's seat. Okay? Good. Yours, where are you? You're in one of the chairs? Okay, so now what I've done is we've moved from the scene, the meeting place, to where you're located. Now, we wouldn't have to do this here, but with, like, ladies in the recovery house, I will also often ask, how old are you? In churches, it's usually 50-50, like, younger or my age now. With the girls in the recovery house, it's always their little girls. They tell me, and it will be just before their first major wound or just after their first major wound. So that's interesting, but let's just check. How old are you? Age you are now. Who else? Oh, same age, yep. 77. Is that, so like 10 years from now? That's when you're going to be 77, right?
No, that's today.
Oh, okay. You're welcome. Okay. So, and then the next thing we would do is we'd say, now, how does God come to you there? Now, with Christians, I'm like, this will work best if we just invite Jesus there. How does Jesus come to you there? Now, with women in the recovery house, I'll often have to be more vague. I'll say, now, for you to feel safe, how would God need to come to you? And some of them, it absolutely can't be a male because they've never met a male who hasn't abused them, including their dad. So it can't be a male. So sometimes they'll say, oh, it's my mom, or it feels like a best friend, or it feels like a cat. God can't be a cat. Well, he's a lion. I guess he could be a cat. Okay, or he comes as an eagle, or he comes as a dog. God can't be a dog. What kind of dog? Well, a Labrador Retriever. Oh. Describe a Labrador Retriever. Friendly, loyal, gentle, kind. I'm like, oh, you're describing God. No way. I thought God was blah, blah, blah. You know, like Christians. How? but then they're like, I'm like, no, that you're exactly describing what God is like. Oh, okay. But let's say it's Jesus, or that he can come as wind or fire or like... He can come as a bird, right? Because he's in the scripture, he's an eagle. Chicken. Can come as a shrubbery. Can come as a, you know, he'll come however they need him to come for it to feel safe for them. How does he come to you? I mean, right now. He's sitting there in front of you. Jeans, barefooted, shirt. Blue Oxford, rolled out. I mean, now we're getting vivid, right? Okay. And then How about you? He's in the other chair? Okay, so that's good. You're even running ahead. Excellent. So he's with you and his arms are around you. Okay. What does it feel like? He's friend, father, Jesus of the Gospels. What? Yep. Very safe, okay. Yeah, and how does he come to you? Is he in the passenger seat? You should let him drive sometime. No, don't. He doesn't have a license. He's like, are you kidding? I've never driven this fast in my life. Yeah, so he's in the other. Yeah. And is he in like modern clothes or Bible clothes or? Good. Okay. She said the predominant thing is he's peaceful. So then we're not just saying, what's he like? Well, we're saying, what's he like? He's peaceful. What's the predominant feeling in your picture? Peaceful, yeah. And his arms around you. And you, what's the predominant feel of Jesus there? What's he? Close friends, okay. And then we might say, then the next question I'll ask is, if you could see his face, and you don't even need to, but if you could, what expression is on his face? He's delighted, and he's delighted because he's there with you, okay? And if you could see his face, what expression would be on it? Love, yeah? How about you? Smile, I guess. It's so funny. This is how Mennonites say, thus says the Lord. I don't know. A smile. That's awesome. Yes, of course. And now, why do you sense why he'd be smiling? I know. You're experiencing it right now. So you're in a car with Jesus in your heart, and he's in the passenger seat close enough to touch, and he's smiling. This is awesome. You're very good at this. Well, that's the next question. So do that right now. When you touch him, that makes an emotional connection. So now we're not just hearing or seeing, but we start to feel. When you touch him, it's like something of him starts moving into you. What is it that you feel? Say again?
Virtue.
Ah. And how about you, ma'am? The love. You can feel the love. Okay. His self-sacrificing love for you. And you can feel it just by touching him. Yeah. How about you? When his arm's around you, what does that feel like? Security. Do you know when we do this with the girls at the recovery house, some of them will feel that. Safety, security, love. They'll say this. I have never felt this in my whole life. This is what I was looking for when I went to that abusive man, when I started taking crystal meth, and I could never find it. And I'm like, you just found it. That's Jesus. How do you like him so far? I love him. How would you like him to be your best friend forever? Yes. And I'm like, I think you might have just become a Christian. You know? How about you? What if you were to touch him, how would the touch work if he's in front of you? Like, does he lay hands on you, or do you take his hand, or what do you do? Okay, so let's do that. When you lean against him like your husband, go ahead and do that. What's that feel like? It feels really good. Yeah. We see this over and over and over with the ladies. I'll say, now go ahead and is he close enough to lean on it? Yes. I said, go ahead, and they'll go. I'm like, what does that feel like? And they go, oh, inner peace. Never felt this before. You know, some of us, we're used to feeling the peace of God. Can you imagine leading someone to meet Jesus, just like we did here, and the first time they ever felt peace in their whole life? What a privilege, right? And then all of a sudden, you know, and so... What I want to emphasize here, I think, is just that God is the most accessible person in the universe. He's not far away. He's not stingy with his love. He longs to do this. He died to do this, right? And so he doesn't want to make it hard. And so what we discovered is, like, these basically just ask five questions and let him trust him. See what he does. See what he does. I'll tell you a funny story just to finish the morning. We've got like a couple minutes. So I'm visiting this. It was a Baptist church in Winnipeg that's open to the Spirit, because that's happening now. Even the Baptists want him, right? It's much better than 20 years ago. And like everybody, I get to do these seminars in just every kind of church because everyone wants to know God. And so I'm in this Baptist church, and they had some pre-service prayer. The intercessors were just sitting on the floor here, and I'm standing around. I was going to join them, but then I notice a girl come in at the back, and she's like asymmetrical, like kind of deformed, and she's got a weird limp, and she looks strung out. And as it turned out, she was a heroin addict. And she's come to church, first time ever. She had been in the building once before for a food bank. So because they had fed her, she knew, I'm going to go there, and she wanted to know how to pray. So she walked right up to me, and she walks up to me, and I forget her name. We'll call her Lexi. Wasn't Lexi, but... So she says, "Hi, I'm Lexi. Are you the guest? Are you the speaker today?" I'm like, "Yes, I'm the speaker today," and I shake her hand. She goes, I've never been in church before, but I don't know how to pray, and I really need to pray. Do you think someone here could teach me how to pray?" I'm like, "I think I could." She said, come and sit down." So we sat next to each other in the pew, because I was nervous of her, right in front of the intercessors. So we got good accountability going. Everything's... And I'm like, "Okay." And so I said, so you want to learn how to pray?" And she's like, "Yeah, I've never been able to, I don't know how to do that." And I said, "Okay, well, if you could meet God anywhere at all, safe place, where would you meet him?" And now she's answering faster than she can think it and tell it. It's just coming out. Partly she was manic. So she's like, "I'm on a beach. And we're like sitting on the beach and we're looking at the ocean waves." I'm like, "What color is it?" "It's blue and it's really beautiful and blah, blah, blah." It goes into this elaborate picture. And I'm like, "And if God were to come there, where would he be?" He's right beside me, right on my left. And I'm like, "Oh, good." And I said, "What expression on his face?" He's smiling. I said, "Ask him why he's smiling." "He's smiling because he loves me and he wants me to know I'm his daughter and he really cares about me." And I'm like, "That's him." "Really?" And she's like, just burst out in tears and said, "You're praying. Really?" And then I said, "What expression do you see in his face? And what's the first thing he says to you?" And all, just what we did, right? And then she said, "I have a question. The doctor said I'm going to die in 6 months." And I don't know if she was telling the truth. You know, she had a lying problem. But what, you know, that was her reality in the moment. So she said, "Do I have to die?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. Everybody dies, but let's ask Jesus." And I put it this way to Jesus. "Jesus, does she have to live under this death sentence?" And then she just burst into tears and Jesus said, "No." And she was so excited, she jumped on my lap. I'm like, "Get off me." And she kind of lost control of herself and she started going, "Brr! Brr!" I'm like, "What are you doing? Brr!" Just so excited. And then she's like, "I gotta get a smoke." And off she goes, you know. And then she does the leaning on Jesus thing and all just exactly what you were doing. But I'm like, "Oh my goodness." Just off the street, heroin addict, death sentence on her life. And she literally met Jesus in 2 minutes. I'm like, "What are we, the fields are ripe." And what we need is the confidence that Jesus really wants to meet people. And you don't even have to go out and look for it, hardly. You will notice if you're just walking with Jesus, people will start complaining to you. That's my cue. If someone has a complaint, it's like, "Wow, me, wouldn't it be great if God were to speak to this, like, wouldn't you want some peace for this? Wouldn't you? And some don't, but the ones who do, it's like, could we do a thought experiment? And then 4 minutes later, they're in a meeting place with Jesus. So that's, I wanted to explain and train and have you look at that. We can go for lunch now, but after lunch, now, then we have to look at discernment, because all of this stuff can get kind of wacky, and it doesn't have to. And the Bible, I think the enemy's given us some very shady means of discernment that aren't true. And then the Bible gives us some really clear ways of discernment that are reliable. And we'll look at that after lunch as our last session, all right? And then we might do a closing exercise that's really fun. So I hope you come back. But we start again, what time?
Well, we're leaving low.
We're going to start at 1:30. 1:30, yeah. Question? Yes. So here's the five questions. So first, if you could meet him anywhere, where would it be? Second, where are you in the picture? And maybe how old? Go with discernment on that. Third, how does God come to you? Or how does Jesus come to you? If they're ready for Jesus. Fourth, what expression is on his face? Five, what's the first thing he says? Oh, yeah, it's actually six. So, and then, can you lean on him or touch him? And what does that feel like? And then we just sort of take it from there. I'm like, from now on, that if we ever pray with someone again, we just say, okay, go to your meeting place. And then, boom, they're in their meeting place. And then you start the prayer time. And it makes any kind of prayer ministry way more effective. So, yeah. All right, so 1:30. All right, see you then if possible.